Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I hope everybody had a good weekend. Actually, the weather was beautiful where I hang my hat. Anyway, let's dive into the week because I've actually got a lot of things in the queue for this week. I spoke to a few of the Republic Review supporting legislators, have tried, I'll use the word push, or tried to help motivate or incentivize a few others that I've been working with. I've actually reached out to a lot of different legislators in the state of Wyoming. But anyway, I'm hoping to get at least a couple of them on this week so that we can talk about their race. And then as soon as they get this election behind them, then getting a coalition started so that we can literally be ready to hit the ground running in January when the session begins. Because I believe, now, let me see if I get this right. Most states have their big session the first year, and that's because they're not running for re-election. So they have a shorter session in the second year because they need to do the politicking and, you know, socializing and availing themselves to the public so that the public knows that they're loved again, or at least they're needed one more time. Anywho, I also have, I've got a lot of different things I want to go through in trying to, my tribute to John McCain, that let's just say that. I've got a lot of content to try to cut through, and hopefully we can, I'm looking to probably do that on Thursday, so you're definitely going to stay tuned because things are dynamic and it may shift, so may do it on Tuesday tomorrow, but we'll see. We'll see what we've got going. Anyway, there'll be some, yeah, like I said, there's going to be some good content coming. I was talking to Ryan Bundy. I'm hoping to have him on this week. So anyway, just some highlights and some opportunities that you will definitely not want to miss. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as 1798Part2.org, as well as RepublicReview.org. As you know, and the reason why you're probably tuning in is because this show really is the only show that is actually talking. We don't pull punches. This is the only show that talks about the solution that is necessary in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. I've said it many times. I'm going to say it again now. If you actually have a better solution, then bring it forward. I would love to have an opportunity to do other things with my time other than saving the Constitution, but it doesn't seem like there is any other plan, any other opportunity. And so, if you've got something that's tangible, by all means, but because I've been doing this for a long time and I've yet to find anybody, and there's been improvements. I mean, I've been able to clarify a lot better over the course of the years because as people start asking very similar questions, it obviously lends to, well, maybe people aren't getting this, so I have to kind of clarify. So anyway, I believe that we're at a point where when people kind of look at this, they're either going to recognize that this is, you know, a good thing or a bad thing. And what I mean by that is that there are people that look at solving the problem as a real bad thing because they make a lot of money off the problem. And I've said this before, there are way too many people out there that are taking advantage of the problem so that you will tune in or that you can buy their products or what have you. That's why one of the things I usually do when I start working with people is I try to ask them, hey, are you ready to retire? Are you ready to kind of hang up the old shingle on what you're doing so that you can possibly go and be, you know, doing something else? And a lot of people, they kind of go, what? Why would I want to do that? I'm making good money. And a few people, and the people that have actually, you know, signed up or gotten on board, because it's really not about something to make money on. The people that are working with me and the people that we've aligned with, those people are really true, and I'll just call them ideologues, because they ideologically get it. This is something that is a, if you want to call it a calling, a ministry, whatever you want to call it, it is something that is a real hardcore need and requirement that we all have to do. And so, anyway, these people get it, and that's why we're aligned. We think a lot alike. The number to call in, if you want to know what it is, I will tell you because the lines are open. It's 215-867-8255. And I've got one new item for you today. And that one new item I have is the GoFundMe. So if you haven't if you haven't heard, we've got a GoFundMe a campaign that's been started. And with the GoFundMe campaign, we have identified what our needs are and so forth. And so I've actually updated that information, like I said, a long time ago, that they wanted for me to kind of really break down of where that money is going. And I have kind of a general sense. I've got a spreadsheet that kind of talks about, you know, what the costs are and so forth. But now that I have a real tangible event that's coming up, and I, you know, would love to get some financial help in covering the cost of that, because again, it's literally not about me trying to subsidize this all by myself. George Washington did not subsidize the Revolutionary War himself. And there were a lot of people that were truly blessed in that process of, you know, supporting the Revolutionary War. And so with that, I would just kind of lend it out to anybody and everybody that really wants to get involved. By all means, you're more than welcome to participate, and you're more than welcome to contribute. As I always go into at this point in time, it is about groveling sometimes, or at least asking for help and a little bit of humility to be applied here. We can't do this alone. We really do need, just like the good candidates that are running that really have the best intent in trying to save the Constitution, they need help. They need support. A lot of times it's more than just your vote. It's helping either bringing more people to the table, helping them financially. If this world we lived in did not require money, then we would be able to, you know, not have to ask for money. But there is, and it, to me, the economic sense that, or I should say, the economic paradigm that we live in as a free market where people do things in bartering and so forth, it absolutely makes sense that we kind of all have to pitch in financially if we want to have the government that we deserve. If we want to have the government that somebody else wants, that they deserve, and they're willing to spend the money and silence you and literally work and collude with a lot of other people, and I'm going to be getting into that today in this show, hopefully at least, then I'll just say this, that we absolutely need to get into the financials of contributing. As I tell people, if you've got a candidate that is a solid constitutional candidate, and we have some in our local area, I tell people you should be contributing $2 a day. If everybody that would vote for that person would give them $2, not a day, a week, I'm sorry. But if they're contributing $2 a week, then that would give this person literally thousands of dollars a week to be able to literally take over, especially in a district that has been dominated by a Democrat. It takes money to actually insurge into these candidacies. And the insanity is all the money's going to these federal seats. Why? Because they know our national government is for sale, and they're literally trying to tank us. The only way we can save it is by throwing the money into the state candidacies and the state campaigns and races. As that's why we're focused in this cause. This cause is focused on those who have the oversight that can reel back and pull back the federal government from all the stuff that they are doing that they have no business doing, Well, they're not going to do that on their own. And as a matter of fact, that kind of lends to why I say every day when I scan through the news, there is no sign that the federal government will ever become a righteous or a noble entity and say, oh, you know what? We shouldn't be doing these things. We have no business having these environmental and energy and educational and all these things that start with E's and everything else. We have no business doing these things, so we're going to go ahead and shut these down. That is not going to happen. That's why the states are the only mechanism, and they have the constitutional authority to actually step in. And that's literally why we go through this educational process of trying to help educate you, because bottom line, people will not act until they know that this is something that they need to do. So if I finally get education to a point with you, the listener, and you really have no question whatsoever that the intent of our constitutional republic was a hard, limited federal government, that they can only do those things that are enumerated. And oh, by the way, we will get into Mr. Iredell's comment on the power of attorney, because I know I haven't read that yet. And so I definitely want to get into that, because that's a different perspective of how tightly wound down the Constitution has put upon the federal government, that they cannot necessarily do anything and everything they want to, that the only way they can obtain any new role, responsibility, and power is going through the Article 5 process, period. That's it. And so, as you can tell, I'm at a hard break, but when we come back, I will be getting into a lot more content. So please stay tuned, and I'll be right back after this. Thanks so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. So one of the things I want you to think about, because I like to give you things to think about, I've been telling you that the progressives, those on the far left, those that are working hard, and I mean they are working very hard, spending a lot of money in trying to conscript us, you and I, into doing all the things that they want us to do. And so one of the things I'd like you to think about, there's a gentleman, his name was Mark Salves, and he was the top Democrat in Pennsylvania. And he was just recently forced to resign. And as a matter of fact, he worked his way up into the party as a real patriot. And so he was asked to resign because of some posts that he had in social media. And so really, it was literally just some little things like, I stand for the flag, I kneel at the cross. You've probably seen those if you're on Facebook. You've probably seen people have their picture with a little frame with the words underneath it that says, I stand for the flag and I kneel at the cross. And they literally forced him to resign. That wasn't it, though. He also basically had this, actually it was his wife. It was his wife who had another patriotic comment and post on Facebook. And bottom line, this is what he said. He said, I am not ashamed of my patriotism one bit. He was a Gulf War veteran. I fought for this country. I think I have a right to have a voice and be patriotic. Well, Mr. Salves, apparently you didn't realize that the Democratic version of patriotism is conscription, not freedom. Apparently you didn't realize that you are literally a part of the enslavement or the slavery party. And so this is a wake-up call. I've been telling everybody that they are wired differently. They do not believe in differences of opinions. They do not believe in having a diverse diverse climate within their own ranks. They only tolerate diversity of ideologies while they're not in control. But when they have full control, it is scorched earth. Now, we saw a very similar thing, and I talked about this last summer, where a local chair at the county, Cecily Wright, was literally lambasted and scorched earth by the Republican Party. But I'm telling you, it was not by the liberty-embracing Republicans. They do not believe in, you know, allowing people to have voice or anything else. This was the establishment that is alive and well in the Washington state and a lot of the states, probably the state you are in. So there's really only a few ways that we can go about taking back the party at the county. And it's not that that's not my focus. My focus is really, I just need to bypass all of the clutter and get to those state legislators. I truly believe that if we, you know, start focusing on them and giving them heat in 2020, so that when they come up for election, we can get enough of the people in their districts to pressure them into stating yes and signing the petitions, or actually the pledges, that I will commit to saving the Constitution. It's pretty pathetic that you actually have to ask somebody that supposedly believes in the Constitution and liberty and everything else, that you got to ask them to sign a pledge. Now, I have had quite a few good liberty-loving candidates and politicians, you know, just kind of push chairs and tables out of the way. Give me that pledge. Let me sign that thing. I mean, they were literally diving for it because they truly believe in this cause. And so it's just really sad that I have to go through all of this work and that we have to use leverage and these types of tools. But bottom line, we've got to do what we have to do. And Mr. Salves is, I think, getting a real eye-opener in what he's been supporting and the direction that that party wants to take this country. There has been plenty of talk. We talked about Hillary last week. We've talked about, you know, all of these people about going lower and lower and kicking and so forth. I am telling you that when they have the opportunity, they will destroy anyone and everyone and everything that will stand up against them. And here's the irony. They do this right before the election to prove that they're the champions of diversity and thought. Or maybe they were not thinking and they've now exposed themselves as a zero tolerance for any deviation in groupthink. In other words, they are definitely a groupthink organization and you have to get on board. Something else to think about. There's a president of the local union in the Universal Stainless. That's a company where he's working. And he's basically talking about this contract that they're trying to get. And they've had one of the best contracts in 23 years. It's been sitting on the table. And they're not happy. They're actually looking at that. There's a lot of steel workers that are looking at going into a strike right before the election to literally call out the executives and so forth. Now, he actually says this. He says, there once was a time where I was barely working 40 hours a week, but now business is thriving and we are working so many hours, it's not funny. So you do understand that when he's working so many hours, a part of that contract was that they were getting overtime. Or he'd be complaining with the fact that we're working so many hours without pay. So he didn't say that. But some steelworkers are complaining and that everyone in the industry is not feeling a windfall from all of the profits and the profits aren't trickling down to the low-level workers. Where do we live? Is this some socialist country? Apparently so. As a result, some steelworkers, which are a key voting bloc for President Trump, are not rallying behind him, presenting a potential liability in the critical midterms. And this gentleman goes on and says, actually, this is Henry Polite, and he says, I'm proud to be a steel worker, and he works for Universal Stainless, and which is a Western Pennsylvania plant. And he says, but I would just like to see more concern for the underdog, the workers, than just the higher-ups. Some steel workers are so frustrated, like I said, that they're about ready to do a walkout. And this is going to come to the tune of about 31,000 employees that are looking to walk out. The group responsible for roughly half of America's steel production is demanding higher wages. Now, I do not, you know, I believe that we need to look at competitive and everything else, but everything that I am reading about this whole story is that it's kind of contained. So what are their wages currently? There have been a lot of sectors that actually took cuts in pay. Is this one? Did they take cuts in pay? I don't know. The Steelworkers Union has supposedly some proposals, and as a matter of fact, I guess that they've sacrificed raises in the past, because that is in this article, that they've actually turned down some raises in the past or said, hey, we'd rather be working, just don't give us a raise. So they haven't had a cut in pay or a significant cut in benefits. But when they start complaining about top company officials that give themselves millions of dollars, of, you know, and CEOs and high-performing CEOs and so forth, those guys will give themselves large bonuses and large, but that's why you hire these guys in, to bring in business and to expand and to, you know, hire more people and to make the company better. The problem with publicly traded companies is that it's not about the employees, it's about the stockholders. You have to elevate the value of the stock to make them happy. If not, because once you sell your soul for that public trading position, then you have to make the people that are buying your stocks happy. Or if not, like I said, they will devalue your stock and all of a sudden you'll be cash strapped and maybe going out of business. That's why some companies have realized that not going public is probably a good thing. However, when you get greedy, you kind of want a huge infusion of money. And that's what happens when you have IPOs. A lot of people jump in and throw you money so that you can make mergers and acquisitions or do all sorts of things with that infusion of money. And so here we're looking at a bunch of, I'll just say it, because you've got to look at unions. The Labor Party and the unions are in, you know, in line with social thinking or socialist thinking. And so when they are asking and demanding that they get all of this extra money, I'm not sure what that means. How much money are they making? Are, you know, and based on the work, is this just hard work, or is this, you know, rocket science that they've got to, you know, maintain credentials and all of these other things like doctors, nurses, and so forth? And where do they stack up in the rest of the industry? Because, yeah, there may be some, you know, there may be some life being breathed into these businesses, but the biggest mistake Americans can make, and anybody can make, when they start utilizing the weapons of unionism or socialism, is that they kill the goose that lays the golden egg, because they want their fair share. And, you know, I've yet to see how that equates in a, and I don't want to use the term capitalist, but in a free market system. There's no such thing as everybody's fair share. Those people who have invested into it are those who are the stakeholders. If you're just working there, then you should be thankful that you got a job. It's a good paying job. You got benefits. You want to be able to invest into a company? Save your money and go out and invest. That's why we have incentives of saving and climbing, or getting educated and climbing to higher positions in our society. I'll be right back. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VONTRACYDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. So let me get this straight, though, because this is interesting, because the top Democrat that was asked to resign, that happened in Pennsylvania, and this is happening in Pennsylvania as well. So these workers are basically saying, hey, yeah, we understand the production's increased, but what or where did the benefits, how did we get benefited from this? How are we benefiting? And I'm going, the direction we were going as a nation was literally sending us down this desolate steel belt again, where we were literally going to be shutting down, as far as I was concerned, the steel industry and a lot of our manufacturing. That has been completely turned around. So maybe the answer to their first question is, how have they been benefited? They've got to keep their job. They got to keep their job. And actually, yeah, production's up, so they're actually working more and making more money. So that means that they've got benefits, are able to, but no, that's not good enough. They want, really, like I said, they want to take all the golden eggs, or at least share them, and put a drain and kill the goose that laid the golden egg. And that's what the unions do. And I'm telling you, my friends, this is a Democratic ploy. This is the socialist ploy where they're just not getting enough. Now, you got to understand that they are in negotiations of trying to work out a sweet deal for them, because they do acknowledge that. But how good is it that they're working? Because as far as I'm concerned, I know lots of people that make a lot of money that are union workers, except for, it seems like, the nurses who are union workers and other types of skills like that. And I'm going, hold it. Really? Is that not sexist? And this one guy was literally saying, I was talking to somebody who had worked with the union industry and so forth. And he goes, hey, look, those union workers, they are wage earners for the family. They're primary wage earners, and they need to bring home, you know, a living wage. And I go, I guess nurses don't. They invest all that time in school, and that's just supplemental income? Are you kidding? We have some really crappy paradigms in this country, but I understand people's frustrations. They do want to see, you know, their lot improve, but you don't rush out the gate, you know, in handing out. And to be completely honest, these executives that are throwing out these, you know, billion or million dollar bonuses or what have you, I think that's a little reckless as well. I believe companies, unless they are in that sweet of a position, I believe companies really need to start investing for, you know, kind of like the Pharaoh did back when Joseph told him, hey, you're going to have 7 lean years and you'll have 7, you know, fat years. So you better start saving your grain and so forth so that when the lean time comes, you'll be able to survive the drought or the famine. Companies have to face those same things, and I don't believe they do, because bottom line, CEOs are you know, a dime a dozen, and they replace those guys to try to, you know, take a company in a new direction or whatever, but they're never long-term. Very rarely are they long-term, because one of the things I've learned about CEOs is they're... Most of them fail, and the fact of the matter is, I think anybody can ruin a company. You know, why is it that there's this certain class of people that have certain resumes, and if you look at how many of those people fail, I honestly believe that the corporate world would be far better off using the William F. Buckley approach of just literally going to the phone book and then just randomly opening up the phone book and putting your finger on a name and going, that person can run this company. Because you'd probably find that person would probably take the responsibilities a lot more seriously than these other people that negotiate these golden parachutes that, you know, literally all they're trying to do is either exercise that golden parachute or figure out how they can jump to either a bigger gig or what have you. So I understand everybody is self-serving, and on both sides of this, it's self-serving. But in context, back to the Democratic plan, what they are trying to do is they are trying to take Pennsylvania back, and they're trying to do this like it's Trump's fault and getting the strike to bring visibility to have an impact on the midterm elections. Let me get into China real quick, because I've got 6 minutes and I want to kind of cover some of these other stories. I know that there was a very popular, as a matter of fact, apparently there's this 20-year-old Yang Kali who has tens of millions of followers on social media. And she appeared to be singing the anthem, flailing her arms around and so forth. And kind of like maybe a Roseanne Barr on singing our national anthem and how everybody was really just upset at how she performed and so forth. Well, they believe, so she's been taken prisoner. She's just disappeared. She's in custody now, because she insulted their anthem. And so the paradigm people need to start realizing is there's no such thing as liberties and freedoms in China, period. And China and their paradigm, they have a sociological, economic, military, political paradigm that is to create a world dominance. I remember reading a book a long, long time ago, when I first started working in engineering in the intelligence community, and The plan was by 2020, China was going to be, they believed that they would be in position to knock America off and actually confront us with a military war. And the reason why they had this plan, because they believed that America would back down. And they believed that they would be able to literally bully us and take advantage, because everyone knows that, you know, there's a big cost to war. And I have told you this before. China does not have a population problem. They don't. They have taken millions and millions of people prisoner, the Falun Dong, and now they're going to start taking even more prisoners to actually force people to start improving, or compelling people to improve their behavior and their attitudes towards the country and its leadership. And we're in this situation because of Nixon, Kissinger, Clinton's, and so forth, and how they have bent over backwards, giving them, you know, we have this intellectual property, and we got patents and everything else, but what do we do when our politicians are literally giving this communist country like China our intellectual property as well as our national security technologies? What do you do? If you don't believe me, go on my... on Reclaiming the Republic website, where my podcasts are, you can go to the KSBN. I think it's even on the Red State Talk Radio podcast down at the very bottom. I have a link that will give you a timeline of how Clinton deliberately was giving away technology and, you know, doing all sorts of things for money so that he could get reelected to China. And he was working with the intelligence operative, Morty Rochter, and so forth. And what we're facing right now is we're facing a very dangerous world, and not just Russia, but we are facing a very dangerous world, because bottom line, Russia didn't do hardly anything to help China. China is in this position because America was kowtowing to them. And I don't even want to say we were kowtowing. I believe it was the globalists a long, long time ago with Nixon and Kissinger that said, you know what? We need to have an extra threat. America has to have two formidable countries that can basically kind of work together to intimidate us and to get us to back down so that the globalist plan can move forward. I think it's interesting, though, that this is all kind of timed to, because a couple of weeks ago, I told you that China would be deploying their 2020, they were going to be fully deploying this beast that was going to be managing the social credit of every Chinese citizen. And so if all of a sudden you befell into a bad way and you criticized the government, next thing you know, that person goes away and everybody was standing around them that didn't turn them in or anything else that may have, you know, questionable credit, they disappear too. It's that is the Orwellian world that we don't even want to really admit. And I am telling you, if you really look at the whole world in the history of demagoguery and nations as they kind of work their way up the peg, all the warning signs are there with China. Look at how Germany, you know, when it was strapped, you know, with all of the debt and was, you know, it was literally hurting, it started nationalizing. Hitler literally used communism to get Germany back. If you look at France and how they were really struggling under King Philip with the revolution, all of a sudden Napoleon, they started, you know, getting back. And what ends up happening with countries that are in those types of situations, they literally work themselves into a path towards war. But this is a lot different because, like I told you, they have had this strategy of taking over the world dominance of economics and everything else. That's why they've been buying up everybody's debt and going down these paths. So I'm telling you that what we've got going on is a bad situation, and we are going to be facing a military conflict, period, with China within the next 10 or less years, probably 5 years. And remember, I also told you that we've got these internal problems ourselves with our educating of these dolts, your children. And so they're literally being indoctrinated into throwing away their liberties, so that when we face a real military threat, they're not going to want to go to war. They're not patriotic and they won't care. And so they will literally vote to actually turn in our liberties and just dive into communism and socialism. We'll be right back after word from our sponsors. Please stay tuned. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
You know, it dawned on me as we, because nothing ever goes as planned, but it dawned on me, I didn't really give you the opportunity to, you know, what you need to do to get involved. And interesting, because I also wanted to bring this up before I got into this. What country actually started sterilizing people, and this happened about 100 years ago. What country in the world was the leader in sterilizing people that had physical and mental disabilities? And do you know what state that was? I write about this in my book, and it was America, and it was New Jersey. I believe it was Governor Wilson who signed into law the sterilization of those who had mental disabilities and physical disabilities and so forth, and literally sterilize them so that they couldn't reproduce. Literally taking away the ultimate liberty of human life itself. And so it's not that it can't happen here in America, because that is the communist paradigm. And we have had communists in office. It's just that they can only get away with so much, and they've been taking more and more, and they have a great advantage with all of the unconstitutional government that they have created, i.e. the education system, i.e. the healthcare system, so forth and so on, because all of those are unconstitutional. If you want to help in peeling this stuff back, email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org or join the Constitution Club, because Keith Broders actually sent that out. I wrote about that in my book as well, but he sent that article out just to remind people of, you know, what our history was. He sends out all of these really good articles regarding some of our history, like the coup that never was in Virginia. And so, and that was, I believe, back in FDR. I forget at this point in time, because what I want to do is get into this Mr. Iredell comment on the power of attorney paradigm with the Constitution, because this is really powerful. Now, we've talked about a lot of different paradigms as to how these framers were putting it into context for the state delegates as they were ratifying the Constitution. How is it? And like I mentioned this before, Nicholas in Virginia stated that, you know, if I had 1,000 acres, and this is what he was telling the delegates at the Virginia ratification debate. He said, if I have 1,000 acres, and if all of a sudden, you know, I give, you know, I think he mentioned 500. If I give half of my acreage to the government to do with what they want, do I need to go and get a whole new deed and survey my land again? No, because he still possesses his land. It's not like he's buying his land. What they have to do is they have to survey the land that they've received when they carve off those 500 acres for them. He retains everything else. And so he doesn't have to go back through the powers of the state, because the states possess everything that was not delegated in that Constitution. And that was the crux of what he was trying to say. Mr. Iredell puts it into the perspective of a power of attorney. And I think everybody here understands a power of an attorney. And I think everybody here understands you do not want to sign a general power of attorney unless you really trust that person that you're giving that power of attorney to. And so this is what he says, quote, "Did any man ever hear before that at the end of a power of attorney, it was said that the attorney should not exercise more power than was there given him? Suppose, for instance, a man had lands in the counties of Anson and Coswell, and he should give another a power of attorney to sell his lands in Anson. Would the other have an authority to sell the lands in Coswell? Or could he, without absurdity, say, 'Tis true you have not expressly authorized me to sell the lands in Coswell, but as you had lands there, and you did not say I should not, I thought I might as well sell those lands as the other?' A Bill of Rights, as I conceive, would not only be incongruous, but dangerous. No man, let his ingenuity be that what it will, could enumerate all the individual rights not relinquished by this Constitution. Suppose, therefore, an enumeration of a great many, but an omission of some, and that long after all traces of our present disputes were at an end, any of the omitted rights should be invaded, and the invasion be complained of. What would be the plausible answer of the government to such a complaint? Would they not naturally say, 'We live at a great distance from the time when this Constitution was established'?" I'm going to take a side here. We're hearing that already. We hear lots of progressives saying, "Hey, that was so long ago. If you support the Constitution, you support slavery." Because that's the direction that they're trying to push this, that the Constitution was the instrument that mandated slavery. And that is an absolute fallacy. It is a lie. It is a misrepresentation in every form. The Constitution was literally an instrument that only delegated very specific powers to the federal government. The states had every power that they wanted to. And at that point in time, until the Emancipation Proclamation, states could arise, and if they wanted to actually create a state of slavery, they could. However, with the Northwest Ordinance at the same time going through Continental Congress as the Constitution, I will tell you that it was ratified and slavery was supposed to stop in the existing states that had it, and it was not to move or permeate into any new states. That was a part of the Northwest Ordinance. So what ended up happening after they actually ratified this Constitution, one of the first things they did, and I believe it was August something, I forget the date, But it was August, the very first session, Congress actually ratified the Northwest Ordinance as law of the land, of as to how they were going to progress in creating new states and so forth. And education was going to be based on the Bible, and that slavery would be kept in those few states. Well, it didn't take long for for the slave states to realize that as these new states came along, they were going to be at a numerical disadvantage, a huge numerical disadvantage, that they would lose their rights of slavery through pressures of the of Congress, from the Senate as well as the House, because abolition, and I already read this before a couple of weeks ago, that they already noted that the northern states were already getting rid of slavery and outlawing it. There was a huge concern of, you know, their slaves literally going up there, because they had laws that said if a slave sat there for so long, they became a freeman. So these were things that they were already discussing at the ratification debates for these few slave states. There were literally only three states that wanted to maintain slavery. That was the Carolinas and Georgia. And so anyway, let me get back into what Iredale said. But the whole point of what I wanted to go on to this aside is that the paradigm of this Mr. Iredale and the North Carolinians, as they were talking about trying to assert this Bill of Rights, they didn't need to. And the fallacy of creating a Bill of Rights is literally just that, because as he's talking here, there are all sorts of rights that aren't listed. That doesn't mean that the government can go and take those. But the bigger problem is that he's literally identifying the change in paradigms to say, hey, you know, we live a long time away from when this Constitution was established, and you know, we can't deal with this anymore. We need something new. And that is a huge fallacy, and that's really the reason I went on this tangent. And so going on, he says, we can judge of it much better by the ideas of it entertained at the time than by any ideas of our own. The Bill of Rights passed at the time showed that the people did not think every power retained which was not given. Else this Bill of Rights was not only useless but absurd. But we are not at liberty to charge an absurdity upon our ancestors, who have given such strong proofs of their own good sense, as well as to their attachment to liberty. So long as the rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights remain unviolated, you have no reason to complain. This is not one of them. Thus, a Bill of Rights might operate as a snare rather than a protection. If we had formed a general legislature with undefined powers, a Bill of Rights would not only have been proper, but necessary. And it would have then operated as an exception to the legislative authority in such particulars. In this effect, in respect to some of the American constitutions where the powers of legislation are general, but where they are powers of a particular nature and expressed defined, as in the case of the Constitution before us, I think for the reason I have given, a Bill of Rights is not only unnecessary, but it would be absurd and dangerous. And he makes these are just such good, strong points, my friends. We literally have to get back into, you know, the paradigm that if it has not been delegated, we have to take those back because they're reserved for the states. That's what Republic Review does, and that's what the audit will do. It will take those things back. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help. So God bless. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you so much. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.